Hi, everybody. It is very, very good to be here. As you all know, I've been traveling for about a month. This time of year is a very, very busy time for me as a speaker because it's when schools and school districts do what are called personal development days. And so for probably 6 or 7 years, I spoke almost exclusively to corporations, sometimes Fortune 20 corporations. And in the last couple of years, it's been more schools, more and more and more schools, which I love because I want to have an impact on the principals. I want to make them happier, more peaceful, more loving, less complaining, the same on the teachers, because that translates down where? To the students, which is literally the future of our world. So I love helping and working with corporations, and I love this sort of impact I'm having. So what I'm going to talk about today and over the next several weeks is something that came as a result of a speech I was giving in New York City to a group of school principals. One of my major clients who hires me to do a lot of speaking had hired me to do this event. And after I did my speech on not complaining, being complaint-free, he said, well, I'm planning the national conference this year. And he said, I need somebody to speak on mindfulness. Do you know anyone who can speak on mindfulness? And I seriously, my first thought was, I have no idea. I don't know anyone. And then I thought, this is a mindfulness tool. That is what everyone has told me. The reason this just took off around the world, and we still send 100,000 of these out every year, 40% to countries that I have no idea how they've even heard of it, is because it makes people mindful of their complaining. When they put it on, they switch it to the other wrist every time you complain until you go 21 days. So I'm standing there with him, and I go, no, I can't think of anybody. And then I thought, I'm an ordained minister. I've been teaching Eckhart Tolle, Pema Chodron. I've been teaching mindfulness for decades. And then I said, you know what? I did think of somebody. And he said, who? And I said, me. And I explained to him why. And he goes, well, that makes perfect sense. We'll book you for the conference. So he booked not only me, but probably five or six other teachers on mindfulness. And one is the European expert on introducing mindfulness into schools. Y'all take that in. What we tend to hear about schools is bad. Why? Because schools are the greatest political football there is. If you're trying to get somebody's vote, you convince them they messing with your baby, you are going to get riled. And that's how schools are used as political footballs. What we don't see is all the great stuff that's going on in schools right now. So I loved the fact that, I mean, when I first started as a professional speaker, I was I never mentioned the fact that I was an ordained minister because corporations didn't like that and because schools were like separation of church and state. Sorry, Hook, pull him off the stage. He can't say that. And now I'm teaching principals everything that I have taught on Sunday mornings for the last 20 years, and I just call it mindfulness. And everyone's totally cool with that. So let's talk about mindfulness, because that's what we're going to talk about over the next few weeks. When we hear the concept of mindfulness, what we tend to think of is a heightened awareness of everything that's going on, being totally present in the moment, 100% to every single thing. Okay, that's not mindfulness. That's much more like autism. And it's painful. You are not meant to be 100% tuned into everything. You have what's called hedonic adaptation. What that means is the 12th bite of pizza never tastes as good as the first bite. And it's intended to do that, or you would eat yourself to death. You are designed to focus on some things exclusively and let other things go. The challenge is, when we say mindful, what most people say is, you got to be kidding me. My mind is overflowing as it is. What do you mean full mind? My mind is already so full, I can't put anything else in. I am too busy to focus on the present. Do you get that? We're that way. I am too busy to be present in the moment. It's not like being like Spider-Man with your spidey sense tingling all the time. That's not what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is defined as being aware of your own thoughts and feelings. That's the definition. Look it up. It means to be aware of your own thoughts and feelings. And again, we go, you got to be kidding me. Of course I know what my own thoughts and feelings are. No, you don't. That is why when the Buddha was walking down the street and a peasant looked at him and saw this beatific smile on his face, he said, "Are you a noble man?" And the Buddha didn't answer. And he said, "Did your daughter just marry a wealthy man? You've got to tell me, why are you so peaceful and happy?" He said simply, "I'm awake." That's what the word Buddha means. It means the enlightened one, which only means the awake one. We go through our days asleep. We think we're thinking, but we're running the same stuff over and over again. And oftentimes it's what other people have put into our minds. The venerable Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh said, "The capacity to listen to ourselves is our capacity to listen to others." We can't be compassionate. We can't be present. We can't enjoy life if we're not aware of our own thoughts and feelings. Now, the thing is, we think, of course I'm aware of my thoughts. You think you are your thoughts. There's a difference. You think that all that junk going through your head is you. It's not. You think 60,000 thoughts a day. By sheer volume, you simply cannot connect with them all because they're like this. And most of them are junk. Most of them are worthless. Here's what I like to think of when it comes to mindfulness. Raise your hand if you've ever watched on television, a football, baseball, any sort of sporting event, any sort. Raise your hand. That's everybody, typically, even me, and I'm not a huge sports fan, okay? Now, when you watch sports, you typically have a play-by-play announcer, right? Who's doing what? What does the play-by-play announcer do? Tell you the play-by-play, but what does that mean? Tells you exactly what's going on, factually what is happening, correct? In addition to that, you usually have 1 to 12, what are they called? Commentators, color commentators. And the commentators will talk about past games, past players, past hurts, past things, future things, what might happen, what could have happened, what he was actually thinking when he had his hands on the ball. None of it makes any sense, and none of it has to do with what's going on. You're listening to the commentator. When you're not mindful, you're listening to the commentator. Why did she do that? I'll bet she did that for a reason. I know, da 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 da. Story, 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 story. And you're no longer thinking, your thoughts are thinking you. We have to disassociate and to begin to understand what our thoughts are so we can point them in the direction we want them to go. Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich said, "What the mind of man can conceive and believe it can achieve." We all know this. The thing is, our minds are running around like dogs that have never been trained, slobbering, running all over the place. When I take Jake for a walk, and Jake knows how to sit and stay, those are the first two things I taught him because I don't want him chasing a squirrel out into the street. When I say sit, boom, his butt hits the ground, and it's just because of repeated work. Well, I've got a neighbor who has two pit bull crosses, crossed with elephants, I think, that pull him down the street. And he thinks his dogs are well trained. "Oh, they're just trying to say hello." No, they're not. They're trying to kill me and my dog. And that's the way most of our minds are, because we've never trained them to sit and to stay. And being mindful is being aware of our thoughts so that we can point them in the right direction. It's also being aware of our feelings. "Well, of course I know what my feelings are." No. Raise your hand if you've seen the Inside Out movie, the Pixar movie. Isn't that great? Okay. You got anger, you got disgust, you got joy, you've got fear and sadness, okay? We all have those things, but we push them down and we neglect them. We sometimes get legitimately angry, but we don't really associate and feel the anger. So then by the time somebody comes up and talks to us, we just blow up and it has nothing to do with them. We don't do anything with our sadness until it destroys our physical bodies. I truly believe that's how my brother passed away. He was just sad. So to become mindful is to become aware of our own thoughts and feelings so that we can direct them in the direction we want to go. To me, mindful is an acronym, and that's what I'm going to contextualize this in over the next few weeks. It's an acronym. It's a practice. It's something we want to do. Now, we do want to get to the point where we are present in the moment, right? Raise your hand. Yes? The thing is, there's so much stuff rattling around in your head right now that you can't stay there. As the great French poet Colette said, I had a great life. If only I'd realized it at the moment. So we've got to get rid of all these stories. We've got to get rid of all this nonsense. And we've got to teach our minds, first and foremost, how to sit and how to
stay.
You know, Eastern cultures are taught to meditate. They are taught to meditate. That is what the M in mindful stands for. My biggest thrill a few weeks ago when I was speaking in Tucson was after I did a full day, and then I did two breakout sessions. The following morning, I had three school principals come up to me and say, I meditated. And I'm going, yeah, yeah. And if I get two of you to do it who don't, yeah. Because friends, there has never been a great spiritual teacher who did not meditate. Find me one. Never. Jesus went off into the desert to be alone, to be with God. I'd call that meditation. You cannot find a picture of the Buddha where he is not meditating. Here's the problem with meditating. It's hard. You know why it's hard? Meditation is mental exercise. Say that with me, please. Meditation is mental exercise. I kept getting these principles to say that over and over again because meditation is not a religious practice. It was popularized through Buddhists, but Buddhism was never intended to be a religion. In fact, most Buddhists refer to it as Buddhist psychology. They don't worship the Buddha. They attempt to emulate him as an enlightened human being. They do not worship him. Meditation is mental exercise. And if you've never exercised a particular body part before, what happens? It gets sore. It's hard and it gets sore. The thing is, it's not difficult. It's just really tough to do. It isn't difficult, it's just tough to do. And it's supposed to, because if I got a 1 pound dumbbell and did that, how much is my bicep gonna grow? Just if I did it one time and put it down? Seriously, at all, right? But if I took a 40 pound dumbbell and even just held it, I didn't have to do a whole bunch, what would happen? My muscle would grow, because what dictates muscle growth is time under tension. When Marty leaves us in these deep lunges so long that we're just like, did she go get coffee? And inside our minds are thinking, when is she coming back to get us? You know, right? It's that time that your muscle is growing the most because you're time under tension. So what we do in meditation is we put our mind under tension, which is to make our mind do what our mind hates to do, which is what we train a puppy, which is
sit.
That's it. Sit and stay. Pema Chodron, the great Buddhist nun, says that if you're meditating and it feels like you're doing it wrong, you're doing it right. Because it is so intentionally difficult. The thing is, the only way to change your life is to change your thoughts. And right now, you're thinking the same way because what has actually been discovered is that you have neurons and receptors in your brain. When you think a certain way, I can't do this. There are receptors in your brain that actually look to prove and believe that, and the neurons actually grow closer towards them. That's why you need to begin to say, yes, I can do this. Yes, I can do this. Yes, I can do this. How many of you all saw this movie, The Dumma Brothers, on Netflix? I think it's still on there. If you haven't, I highly recommended it. In Alabama, there's a prison. I think it's in Tuscaloosa. Pretty sure it is, actually. There's a prison that has the highest incidence of violence in the country. Prisoner on prisoner, prisoner on guard. There have been guards killed. There have been a lot of prisoners killed. So they wanted to do something, and they hired a psychologist. The psychologist came in, and bless his heart, was an empty cup. He said, I have no idea how to reduce prison violence. And so he Googled reducing prison violence. He found a paper written by a psychologist at a prison in India who had taken the most violent criminals, not the least violent, the most violent, and had them practice Vipassana meditation for a week. So that is what they did in this prison. What does that mean? They isolated the prisoners in a dorm, in a gymnasium. They made them live in there for a week. They took their meals there. There were special bathrooms they used. They did not leave the gymnasium. Every one of the people who they used was a multiple repeat major murder rapist. One man said, well, I killed my entire family. Just like he said, I just got back from Starbucks. Okay? They put these men into rooms. They put bunk beds in the rooms. And then they had the men sit for 12 hours a day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and feel their feelings and think their thoughts. That was it. Feel their feelings and think their thoughts. Prison violence at that prison disappeared. These men had never addressed, they had never been mindful, they had never been aware of their own thoughts and feelings. And when they did, they addressed the hurt that was inside them. They addressed the pain. The movie takes an interesting turn because what happens is they get shut down by a Christian organization who doesn't understand that meditation is mental
exercise.
So I'm going to teach you how to exercise, and it won't take but a moment. There's a difference between visualization and meditation. And just because people always seem to ask, I have three practices I do. Every morning, I do 5 minutes of visualization. And what does that mean? I see my life better and better and better and better in every single way. I think of all my relationships. I think of my physical body. I think of my finances. And I see myself having it better and better and better. Why do I do that? Because most people walk around seeing their lives getting worse and worse and worse. And Jesus said, as you believe, so shall it be done unto you. So I see it better. The next thing I do is this simple meditation I'm going to teach you. This is Zen Buddhist meditation. It's so easy, it's boring, and it's supposed to be. You are supposed to be gloriously bored. Think of a puppy sitting there going, when's he going to say the command to let me go, right? You need to just sit there and be there, and you become stronger, okay? So let me just explain the process. It's very simple. You don't have to move or anything yet, but we're going to do it in a second. Number one, you want to sit up straight. And why do you want to sit up straight? Because the mind knows that when the body slouches, you should go to sleep. The second thing is you want to do is you want to then close your eyes and focus on this third eye or the spot between your eyebrows. Again, why? Because when you close your eyes still move around. And if the eyes are moving, the brain is moving, okay? The next thing you want to do is you want to inhale. Inhale and exhale. I actually do an ujjayi breath because I want to make myself aware of my breathing. The next thing you do is as you inhale, you say to yourself, I am breathing in. And as you exhale, you say, I am. Boy, see how easy this really, really is? That's it. It's that simple and that difficult. There's one final step. Thoughts are going to come scrambling in like crazy. That's just the way it happens. Now, you can jump on one of them and ride off like it's a horse, which is what we usually do. Or you can say, that's a horse. And the way you do that is, you know where we put our shoes out here in the cubbies? Imagine you've got a cubby in your mind, and you're going to put all thoughts that go together in those cubbies. For example, the ones that come to me the most when I meditate, number one, to-do thoughts. And it can be something as simple as, I want to take Marty to the movies in 3 weeks. That's still a to-do thought. Or it could be, I've got to go home and wash the dog. It's a to-do thought. The second one is, and it has to do with my painful childhood, is self-deprecating thoughts, negative thoughts. And I go, that's a self-deprecating thought. I'll just put that over there. But then I have self-aggrandizing thoughts. Aren't I great? Those are equally wrong. Those go over here as well. And the last one that I tend to have is what are teaching thoughts. And that is, I'll be meditating and I will have been reading one book and another book and then all of a sudden see how they perfectly fit together and I can't wait to teach it to people. And I still, because my mind is trying to get me to stop meditating. The whole time you're meditating, your ego is poking you and prodding you, trying to get you to move, trying to get you. I know when I'm really meditating well, when I have an almost uncontrollable desire to check the time. Surely it's been 19 minutes, minute and a half. But that's the way it's supposed to feel. So, we're going to do this. I'd like to invite you wherever you are, comfortably sit up straight. All right? Take a few deep breaths, and on the third one, just close your eyes. Focus your attention on your third eye. Breathe deeply and rhythmically. Breathe with intention so that you are aware of your breathing. And as you inhale, affirm, I am breathing in, and I am breathing out. As a thought comes in, ask yourself, what kind of thought is that? And where does it belong on my cubby? You get to design your own categories. Your job is to be aware of these thoughts. They're like birds flying into a room that you toss a net over them and then you place them in a cage, in a cubby. Otherwise, I am breathing in and I am breathing out. Open your eyes. Wayne Dyer said, trying to catch your thoughts is like trying to catch a greased water balloon. Isn't that a great analogy? Just the slippery kind of a thing. What begins to happen, though, is over time as you meditate and you begin to realize, wait, I can grab that thought. Then when somebody else says to you, you know what, I don't think you can do that, you can go, ooh, that's just a thought. I don't have to do that. I can grab that and put that over here where it belongs. Or when you have a self-doubt thought, you can say, you know what, that's just a self-doubt thought. I think I'll go to this shelf and get a self-aggrandizing thought instead. So many times people say, you know, as soon as my life gets easier, I'm going to start meditating. And I always want to say, yeah, and as soon as I get in great shape, I'm going to start going to the gym. This is how you get your mind in great shape. My suggestion would be to start tomorrow. Put it in your phone. I have reminders for me to meditate throughout the day. Put it in your phone. Do 5 difficult minutes. And then in a week, bump it up to 6. Then in a week, bump it up to 7. Most people sit down and try, I'm going to meditate for an hour. That's like trying to exercise all at once. It doesn't work. This is mental exercise. You've got to work up to it. So work up to it. But remember the words of the Buddha. Drop by drop, the bucket is filled. The thing that's going to change your life is you, but the only way to do that is to control your thoughts. And until you teach that puppy to sit and stay, it's not going to happen. Grab somebody's hand. Let's close in prayer. So, Infinite Spirit, as we come together holding hands, we share a commonality, and that is that our minds tend to race hair everywhere. But we can begin to control them. And as we control them, we can be present to what is, we can release what is not, and we can build the life that we desire. Thank you, God, for this incredible power that we are blessed with. We commit tomorrow and the day after to utilizing it. And so it is. Amen.